May 30th, 2017. What a year. This is Inside Out, the naked truth, coming to you live, Santa Cruz Mountains of California from Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional.
But the truth is always naked.
I'm Errol Strider.
And I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we welcome you once again to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition with all its eccentricities and what to make of it, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and the many voices of Errol Strider.
I am one of the voices here, and I'm planning to be there later. Oh, good. I was so delighted to be here tonight, Barney. Yeah, we are all here. Going to make some commotion because they're having a very thing that they're featuring this. Okay, thanks, guys. That's good. We're going to get back to you later on in the show. How about the fact that our show is sponsored by Go Raw, nutritious and delicious natural foods available at Costco, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and Trader Jane's, by the way, is a new store. Opening up just out on the range, Trader Jane's, and of course, goraw.com.
You did say it's 100% raw food, not just natural food. You
know, that's why they call it Go Raw.
That's right. That's right. They did. So tell us, Errol.
Let me ask you a question. At what point in any given verbal exchange do you reach the point where you say, enough said? Well, we're going to try and find out tonight. During our conversation, because we'll be exploring this week's featured phrase. Can you guess?
Enough said.
While we enjoy conversation, I wonder how much of what we say really adds quality or value to the exchange. That would be hard to measure. And sometimes, as you may know, the saying of it is more about connecting than about actually exchanging information. And connection is good. Have we said enough about that? Maybe. Then there's the incessant conversation and analyses by experts and pundits. Fortunately, I can express my enough said impulse by turning off the TV, closing my computer, or my mind. As I get older, I notice that there really isn't much to say about anything, really, unless a question is sincerely asked or information really needs to be conveyed, or just for the sheer joy of the exchange of voices and good humor and interesting observations, and especially gossip. Enough said about gossip. I would like to point out, however, and this is a line from the Urantia book, when a great truth seeker and a great truth giver meet, the result is a great and liberating enlightenment born of the experience of new truth. By the way, they meet at the local bar, any place, McDonald's, anywhere, fine. Oh, but the funny thing is, who's to know in any given conversation which of these people is the giver of the truth and which is the truth seeker? Does it matter? Well, we're ready to jump in tonight, so enough said. Of that introduction, what do you say, Rochelle, about enough said?
Enough said.
Oh.
I mean, when is enough said? When I said what I said, then enough is said. But is it enough if it is not received fully? Mm-hmm. Or is it enough for just having said it? And the listener's filter is working to keep what they need. But then enough said about enough said. And let's get on with saying what it is we want to say.
Well, we got a bunch of things to say, evidently, because we're going to be yapping here for almost an hour now. Time is cutting into our quality time.
I don't think we adhere to Enough Said, you and I, because we always have something to say. I mean, we've been together for over 40 years. We seem to be still talking to each other.
Well, that's the value of a short memory. So you can just keep that rap going, and you didn't know if you said it 5 minutes ago or not.
Oh, that's not true. I remember.
You do remember.
What you said 5 minutes ago. No. Well, what did you say 5 minutes ago?
Every week I want to make sure I cover certain things just because this could be my last time. So I want to make sure I say this before I'm through, and hopefully we'll get a good enough said from you about it. I was thinking the other day, and I mentioned this last week, that the big issue that we need to create and build is trust. So, but the question that I'm posing to myself is that you have these interesting two world views, and essentially I'm going to propose a third one.
What are the two?
The two worldviews are the secular worldview. I've been listening to many commentators, all decidedly secular atheists, brilliant people. I'm learning so much from every one of them. But there is just no room in that perspective for what we would call the divine mystery to unfold and express itself. Second worldview. You have people who engage with the divine mystery, but it's generally through tradition and ritual and pretty much the way it's been for a long time. Nothing wrong with either of those, but I don't think either of them are going to get the job done. For one thing, they consistently tend to be separate. But the fact is, and I think science is moving us in this direction with quantum physics, and we're discovering more and more that what's in this space that forms most everything is actual consciousness. Of course, the debate is which came first, the consciousness or the chicken?
I always side with the chicken.
Yeah?
Because I like chickens.
So trying to slip in with a perspective that is palpable spirituality that integrates well with the material order of things in which we are facing a lot of troubling circumstances.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. That was a warning out. That was enough said.
That was enough said. That was sentences got so, tied together. And they just kind of moved around each other in such a way that you said so many things in a little bit of time that I'm somewhat confused. But let's put it this way. Mm-hmm. You talk about, what do you want to say about two worldviews? What do you have to say about them? That these two worldviews, can they come together? Is there something that will bring them together in terms of where we are this time and time? Divisiveness. I think it's within us, it's without us, and it surrounds us.
Right.
So here's another division. How do we bring it together? And probably the same way we would bring any divisiveness together.
And that is?
Find a place that they have something that they are the same. In every divisiveness, there's a similarity or there's a connection.
There's a connection in all the divisiveness.
Yes, always there's a connection in everything. I mean, every part of our being, there's something that links it.
Right.
There's a link. And finding the link is what any philosopher would go about doing, I think. And since we are spiritual philosophers, let's give it a try. Enough said, huh?
It could be enough said, but let me come at it from a different angle, if I may.
What other angle?
You're about to hear.
We stand before and in the midst of each other as individuals, carved out of the space, the past, the bodies and experiences we have occupied during the storms and calms of our existence. Each with his or her own agenda, collections of dreams, ought-tos, have-tos, want-tos, or better-nots that reach for fulfillment, for survival, for selfness. We face each other in separation, thinking that because we seem different, there's not enough for each of us, stranded on the outskirts of our being, looking for a passport to center. As I ride my fickle feelings and my unquenchable yearnings for more, or something else, or less of that, anything but what is within, where I fear coming face to face with the terror that the love that I say I want might actually find me. And in that all-consuming embrace, I might simply disappear. But is our more or something else the same for each of us? Do our dreams resonate, or continually rebound in the dumb echoes of our isolation? A cross-meshing of goals and aspirations, often at odds, though destined for convergence in a non-negotiable eternity.
That's from a piece that I produced called Connectedness. Did any of the images or the perspective jump out at you, Rochelle?
Well, you know, when I'm listening to something, it's hard to grab hold of one thing. And because if I grab hold of one thing, then I lose the things that are coming. So I just go on the journey. And I feel that the journey was very nice. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the journey. I would have to listen to it again to pinpoint the things that jump. Thank you.
Ja, this is Professor Schnitzel, and I have often been accused of saying too much. But if the people don't say enough said, if they said enough said, I might consider stopping. But they don't say that. They just kind of cover their ears and blow smoke in my face, which I should get the hint. But I want them to have said enough, because then I will feel that what I have said is thorough enough to have completed the investigation onto that subject, and so that it is completely integrated and assimilated the thoughts with the words, and so no more things required. So that's when you say enough said. You feel like a meal has been eaten, you're ready to belch because it feels so good. You have to open your belt in your pants because enough said, and you're feeling very satiated with sadness. Enough said.
It's interesting that we don't always know how to monitor ourselves in enough said, that sometimes we get caught in the words that come out of our mouths. You know, we fall in love with them, and we're just going to keep massaging them and playing with them and connecting with them and to make a point and to have it made pithily is an art unto itself.
Let's talk about pithily points for just a little bit. There are points, and there are pickly points. And we hope that you can keep them separated, because when you can't, then the pickly and the point.
It wasn't pickly, pithly.
Pithily. The point itself feels like it's redundant because it's just a point and it wants to
say. It is pithy.
It's already pithy.
That's
right.
Like,
you know, enough is enough with, you know, reducing my pithiness.
Oh, your pointedness.
My pointedness, as the case may be. Or it could be my pithiness, what do you call it? When something's the pithiness scale or something, you know, wind index. Yeah, it's the pithiness index. And when people come through our house, we have them go through and take the pithiness index security check. And,
oh, God, enough said.
Imagine the security system like at an airport, except it's checking, making sure that you're not going to use any more words than you really need to, because there's a word shortage. That's why last week we talked about adding more letters to the alphabet in order to solve the word shortage.
There isn't a word shortage.
Oh, no?
No, not only that, but every year there's a dictionary that comes out and puts more words into it, because words that are part of the idiom, for whatever reason, you know, become accepted words. Like, I'm trying to think, like, what words there might be that, like, jive, when it first came out, probably was not in the dictionary.
Where was it?
It was in the mouths of the people that were saying it.
Oh, my God. So it was just, they had it in their mouths.
That's right. They created it, and then it went into the dictionary as it became accepted as verbiage.
Wow.
And it happens a lot. So we're not losing words. We're gaining words every single year.
Wow.
Enough said about that.
Well, do you want to add a word to it now? I got a word.
What?
Framelhosen.
Oh, you just made that up, and
no,
it doesn't mean anything.
Well, that's what we're going to give it meaning. I'm going to tell you what I think its meaning is, and then I'll give you a shot at it. Framelhosen is the state of mind that you're in when you're putting your socks on. See, that's a very unique moment in people's life, and everybody does it. When you're putting your socks on, you're in a Framelhosen state of consciousness, which is an excellent time to drop out of the world of perception and discontinuity and allow yourself to just be part of that transitional world where the sock is going from being on to being off, or vice versa.
Ah. Enough said.
See?
I'm not even going to go there.
You know, I wouldn't go there if I didn't have to, if I weren't compelled by my mind.
Oh.
Well, you know, I think it's important to people to realize, you know, that I hear you. So, but sometimes it's helpful to listen to someone, really listen, like listen to this man.
I feel your head resting heavy on your single bed. I want to hear all about it, get the tool off your chest. Ooh, I feel the tears and you're not alone. No. When I hold you, well, I won't let go. Why should we care for what they're selling us anyway? We're so young, girl, and you know. You don't have to be there, babe. You don't have to be scared, babe. You don't need the plan of what you want to do. Won't you listen to the man that's loving you? Well, keep spinning and you can't jump off, but I will catch you if you fall. I can't tell you enough. I hate to hear that you're feeling low. I hate to hear that you won't come home. Oh, why should we care for what they're selling us anyway? We're so young, girl.
you're scared, babe. You don't need the plan of what you wanna do. Won't you listen to the man that's loving you? Come with me, ooh. Easy, easy, and a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 9, 9, 9. You don't have to be there, babe. You don't have to be scared, babe. You don't need a plan of what you wanna do. Won't you listen to the man that's loving you? You don't have to be there, babe. Be scared, baby. Don't need a plan of what you want to do. Won't you listen to the man that's loving you?
You don't have to be scared, babe. You don't need a plan of what you're going to do. And that was sung by George Ezra.
You don't have to be scared, baby. I think that's something worth talking about all the time.
So here's the thing, the third perspective that is really lacking in all these talks that I hear, especially from the secularists. I don't hear the word love mentioned very often. And it goes back to my poem, which is about, you know, the love that I say I want, the fear that it might actually find me, and its all-consuming embrace, I might simply disappear.
You will.
Huh. I knew there was a catch.
I mean, you will, as you have defined yourself. I think that's one of the things that we are afraid of with love. Because love is indefinable, we don't want to go there. We want definition. We want definition of ourselves. We want definition of everything because it makes us feel secure. You know, too much freedom is scary. So I think somebody I know once wrote something like that. But I think that... there's a point in our lives if we're willing to go there. And the point is when we recognize that at some point we have to let go of the definition of ourselves because it's going to disappear. We're going to die. And when we contemplate that death, that entry into everything and nothing simultaneously, at that point, I think we can understand what letting go really means. What?
Enough said.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Enough said about that. I was thinking of words that might not have been in a dictionary like 100 years ago, like thermal, longitude and latitude until they had maps and began to map things probably that never existed, longitude and latitude.
I've also been kind of partial to the longitude.
Well, you would be.
Yeah, just going up and down. I love that. So back to this question. Oh, Barney, do you want to say something? Oh, yeah, thanks for including me in the conversation. This is hot stuff here because I think I have a sense about what you're talking about. Or you'd get to the place there where you realize this core issue is like, who are you and how do you know you are and what is your meaning of security or whatever it is. But when someone is just thinking about how to pay the bills or how to make a great deal and everyone is so easily caught up in all the stuff that's going on out there, all the shenanigans of the world, and they talk about it and they make a lot out of it. You know, Mr. Shakespeare, he was, he was actually part Italian. They don't say that in his biography, but he had his, I think it was his mother's mother.
Oh, Barney, come on, enough said.
I figured that phrase tonight would come back to haunt me.
But the boo.
But the thing I want to say is, so it's very interesting, you know, where is the point of entry? That guy who wrote that book years ago, I think you met him, Joseph Chilton Pierce, The Crack in the Cosmic Egg. I think that says something about it, that at a certain point you crack open and something else is emerging. And it really is like a butterfly. And we really are in like the cocoon. So might as well enjoy the cocoon ride, because if that's our mortal life, we all know it ain't going to last very long. Enough said.
Enough said. And the truth is that you can't interrupt the chrysalis, because if you do, you will never have a butterfly.
That's right.
Enough said about that.
Yeah.
You know, so we are evolving and we're growing and we're forming whatever we are into something that will take flight and change and become something else. Enough said about that.
I was reading in the Keys of Love Without End, Yeshua's, one of Yeshua's commentaries, that he said, we're here to grow two things, faith and consciousness. And it's fascinating what he has to say. And he says, both of them require that you live in a universe, in a life setting that's full of opportunities and dilemmas and issues and things, because you can't develop either of them without confronting those kind of challenges. But they work together, the faith and the consciousness, because the faith is this part of the will that allows you to engage and activate, and the consciousness is this ever-developing awareness. It seems, from an evolutionary perspective, that evolution itself is on a quest for greater and greater awareness of its greater and greater multi-dimensionality and complexity. There you go.
Enough said, because evolution is on our side.
Oh, sure, it is there on our side. And this is Father O'Malley. I love it when you talk about evolution. I feel like I'm at the altar of the great sainthood evolutionary herself there. And, oh, she's doing a fine job. And it's interesting that they give us a little peek into this evolutionary billions of year process that we know of, by the way. And here we come along and we're like a little scratch on the surface of the smallest scratch. And there it is, our human awareness. And yet our awareness is like full. It's replete there. But what is it that we're replete and full of? The awareness of ourselves. We're all fully aware of ourselves unless we have some malfunction. So there you have it. You have this full awareness. So evolution, I think it was about not just gaining awareness, but to gain awareness of itself. And itself, as it multiplied into a variety of phenomenon, especially conscious phenomenon, that can grow up to be aware, not just of themselves, but of each other. And that's how the universe gets more enriched with more diversity. Enough said.
You know, as you were talking, I just realized something very interesting. I realized there never can be enough said.
What?
I mean, yes, there's enough said about anything at any moment, but there's so much to say, or so much to explore and then say about what we explored or discovered, that you can never run out of anything. It's like you can't run out of it because we know so little. So if we're constantly open to learning and open to expanding our consciousness, then there can never be enough said.
It's an ongoing conversation.
It's an ongoing conversation, just like evolution is that same way. Our mind evolves. Like the thoughts I had when I was very young were limited. And there's more to my thoughts now. And yet they, too, are limited. But I see them expanding with my consciousness, that I'm more aware. And the more awareness allows me to expand my consciousness even more, and then I'll get more aware and more. Enough said about that.
You know, I feel like we're on this junket, and it's like it's taken us so fast into this greater awareness that I just, you know, I want more people to hop on board and let's party. Let's have an awareness party.
I don't know why it seems that one, because it's so fascinating to me to constantly be aware, to constantly challenge my own mind and my own thinking, that I think, well, isn't that what everybody wants? But it doesn't seem to be like that. You know, there are definitely people who are like that, but it does seem to be a minority. It doesn't seem to be a majority. It doesn't seem we have evolved to that place where our very minds afford us pleasure.
Look, we just barely got into an industrial age and the Renaissance and all that just in 200-300 years. We just discovered evolution as a viable, compelling, empirically validating process less than 150 years ago.
And still people won't believe in it.
Exactly. I mean, we just gave women the vote not even a century ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we are very youthful and robust, especially here in the United States. When I hear about Europe, I feel like in some ways the Europeans are more mature. And I'm sure it was because they had a couple huge world wars wash over them and through them in a very intense way.
And those were the wars that, you know, we know of in these centuries. But prior to that, they were warring all the time. I mean, you know, when I read the history, the English history, my God, they were one war after another within their own
families.
Families.
Yeah.
You know?
Cousin Henry, yeah, put your armor on. Don't talk to me. Enough said. Let's go.
I mean, there's this barbarism within the human condition, which is, you know, some people speak of it as the lower mind, but it hasn't burned out quite yet at all.
Speaking of King Henry, good evening, this is Professor Umbridge. I can barely get some of the words out, and I need to take advantage of them and hurry up and get through quick before someone more safe than me enough said. Continuing on with that, this thing about the people in, like, you know, during that period of time, the Middle Ages, and Henry, and hello, Henry, and shall we have a round of golf? And Henry would say, no, let's go bowling. You know, let me go chop off some of my wife's heads, for example, just to see how that goes.
Professor Umbridge.
They were very keen on head chopping off at that time as a way of kind of simply and quickly ending whatever it is about the other person they could not tolerate. But in some ways it was a very evolved way of dealing with it. People weren't, they didn't draw and quarter them. I've never fancied being drawn or quartered. And when you combine them, no, enough said about that.
Pretty gruesome.
Very gruesome. And that's why it's good.
Enough said about gruesome.
Yeah. That's why it's good that we've evolved now where we have sports to kind of roughly satisfy that enormous testosterone impulse and be able to take it out and yell and scream at each other. So we are making progress. But keep in mind that we are currently at the yelling and screaming at each other stage of evolution. And that sort of speaks for itself, wouldn't you say?
Enough said about that.
You know, that's a good point, because there was the beating on each other, and there's still a fair amount of that going on. We haven't even gotten out of that stage, although we have moved much more, as you point out, to the yelling and screaming at each other, and with all these words.
There is still the need for dominance or subjugation, dominance through subjugation. That exists in our humanness, and I think that would take eons to wear itself out, unless, of course, there are things I know nothing about, which, enough said, I know nothing about.
Well, that way, when you know hardly anything about it, you can get to enough said very quickly. Like, for example, I know nothing about these snails that I heard somebody talking about, that this is favorite animal. Enough said. See, that's all I know about it. But the guy whom I really appreciated was Stephen Jay Gould, who was a biologist, and he had a wonderful fascination with natural science. And in this YouTube that I watch, they're interviewing him, and he was talking about the seven wonders of the world, and very interesting variety of choices, one of which, from his point of view, was Charles Darwin's Origin of the Species. Anyway, so it's a video well worth watching, and he talked about consciousness, and that's how was a great wonder of the world, and the next was, I know what it was, barbecued spare ribs.
Oh, Errol.
No, I think it really was.
Enough said. Okay. That may be your wonder of the world, but I don't know about everybody
it's
else.
It's wonderful. It may not be the seven wonders, but it's full of wonder. Hey, well, what can I tell you? Nobody said it was going to be easy.
I'm going to find heaven. I made curry paper wings. I think they'll carry me well. I left you a love poem, the best I have written. My favorite words were the ones I couldn't spell. They say that I'm a lunatic. They say that I am a fool of it. I say that it's worth dreaming just for the dream of it. It's all about passion. It's all about perception. Don't call me on my cell phone, cause there ain't no reception when I'm gone. When I'm gone, I think I'm growing feathers, but I'm not quite sure of it, cause I start to get dizzy about 100 feet up. I made friends with the clouds, I made friends with the birds. If you ask a goose a question, he never shuts up. You and I hope that you're missing me, cause I could use your lips on me and a little bit of drama me. For the moment I can see way better than I've ever seen. Don't sell my stuff on eBay, cause I might be back before I'm gone. Before I'm gone. My fingers, they are blisters, and my eyes, they are bullet holes. My heart's still beating, guess I'm pretty lucky. Pretty lucky. Pretty lucky.
This is, you're a pretty human being. Yeah, you're a pretty human being. When it all comes crashing down, you try to understand your meaning. No one said it would be easy, this living. It ain't easy. And that was Cloud Cult singing about how we evolved. So the prognosis from a lot of smart people, I was listening to Jeremy Rifkin, well worth listening to him or reading some of his books. He's someone I've read for many years. And this guy really has a handle on how we can move in some really positive directions. And he has taken powerful action. He's went to talk with the Chancellor of Germany, Merkel. Am I pronouncing it right?
Merkel.
Merkel. And suggested a plan. And they're implementing it. It's like they're on it. In terms of the environment and how things are shifting. So one of his core premises in his book is that we've had the industrial age and then we have the next stage. And people who are running a lot of these things, like let's say the head of the automotive industries, they're still running on the premise that people want to own their own cars and things like that. And that's all changing with this, like, share a ride. And the young people, that's not – he talks about the millennials, kids up to about late 30s. that's not where they are. They're sharing. It's a completely different mindset in terms of how we energize and everything else that's coming about. It's just evolving out. And so the old will drop away because it will either catch up and play by this new thing, or it will drop off of evolution and have been a point of view that tried its best and did its best and lasted a while, but now it needs to go.
I know enough said about that, but I'm very aware that when something feels like it's dropping off or it doesn't have a place, sometimes it fights harder to stay there and makes a mess as a result of it. And I think that a lot of what we're seeing right now is that because there's a shift, and whenever there's a shift, it tends to be chaotic.
Well, you know, of course.
And so this chaos that we're experiencing across the globe has a lot to do with the fact that there's a shift happening in consciousness, but it's not apparent. It's just you can feel it. It's sort of like one of those icebergs, you know, dropping off from the glacier. So, you know it's you can start to feel it, but it hasn't dropped off yet. So you don't even know the ramifications of what's going to happen once it drops off. But you can feel it. You're very aware that it's shifting and that there's a rift in the middle of it and something is going to happen, but you're not sure yet what it is until it happens.
Ooh.
Enough said about that.
I love that. Did you know in an early incarnation I was a baby glacier? Yeah, they have these.
Only you would even think of such a thing.
Well, someone
that you're a baby glacier.
Baby glacier. Oh my God!
Well, it's kind of fun to be sort of an inanimate, even though it's not really. There's all these atoms and things.
I thought you were gonna say it was fun to be inadequate.
But no, I wasn't going to say that. Enough said about that. But to get into the create a consciousness in an inanimate thing, like you are a chair. And how would you talk to somebody like, you know, oh, please sit on me. That's what I'm meant for. You know, it's like to think in terms that it's fun. Anyway, I have fun. Never mind. Enough said about it.
If I could jump in here, you said you were talking about a chair and you're talking about being a baby, a glacier. When I was in an early incarnation, I was the leg of a chair.
Oh, Rabbi, you're just silly as can be.
And it was just past the time when he was a baby glacier. Now, the point I'm making is that people talk. Sometimes they talk because it's just joyful to share. This is a good kind of talking, and it doesn't really matter what you say. You won't remember any of it anyway, and it's one of those things that you could say enough said at any time you want, and you'll still keep talking. But you'll know it's enough said, but it's not enough because the love that you're sharing when you're talking to each other, unless you're bawling each other out and the yelling and the screaming that you talked about a little earlier, unless that's happening, then it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Is it enough said? Well, it depends on how much is enough. And each person has to decide for themselves how much is enough. And, you know, like they say, the old evolutionary stage that's dying had a phrase about yourself. Anyway, it was not enough. That whole evolutionary phase is not enough. And this phase that's now emerging with the millennials and everything else in the next couple of centuries has two words, enough already.
I think you've been talking to Errol, I think, Rabbi.
Enough said.
Enough said. You know, I was thinking of our granddaughter, Errol, when she talks, you know, we think of it as babble. But she walks around the house talking. I can't understand what she's saying, but she's saying something. And she doesn't think of it as communicating. She's not communicating with us. She's not even trying to communicate with us. She's playing with sound. She's playing with language. She's hearing it and making it.
It's practice.
Yeah, she's practicing talking.
It's so great that she can actually talk and communicate her wants and needs. And we love it when she says, like, gamma up or out.
Gamma walk.
Gamma walk.
She says, gamma, pick you up.
You know, I thought of a place where enough said is really enough said. And that's the place where we need to take action because, let's face it, actions speak louder than words. That would be chocolate milk. Action speaks louder than words. I love this line here. I think this is certainly appropriate. The president says the world is going to change. And they do several, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mr. Say is nothing. Mr. Do is the man. Action speaks louder. I love that. Mr. Say is nothing. Mr. Do is the man.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, remember when we would be in meditation and we heard so clearly that when our conviction is stronger than our considerations, we would act. And I think about that all the time because we act all the time. We act out whatever. We act on an intention. We act out. And then there's the greater actions, you know, the larger actions. And so we have conviction about that. What is it? So the conviction is something to explore.
Enough said.
Okay. I'll get on that one.
There's a cycle between the action and giving and receiving, and I feel like I'm in the receiving cycle right now because I've been given this opportunity to study and listen to and ponder so many perspectives from so many different disciplines and orientations of life. And I feel with each one, I'm being pushed and becoming, each one is like a little thing that pushes me to become a little bigger. It's like it creates a little branch that's starting off this part of me. And I've got all these branches starting to grow. They're little nubs right now. They're really kind of tiny. But I feel like I'm being informed by all these different perspectives, some of which conflict and compete, and they're all different worldviews. But I want to give thanks to them because it's definitely made me a more bumpy guy.
Bumpy?
Got a little nubby, more nubby guy.
maybe more aware. I think your awareness is definitely growing in terms of becoming more inclusive. You know, like we sometimes our awareness is very exclusive. It's just we were aware of this part, and then we expand that part and we become more aware of parts that we hadn't been aware of before. Enough said.
What I've become aware of, like I happened to listen to a piece of writing, something that I notated a week or two ago, and it's the kind of thing that I came up with, you know, for many years. But in light of what I've learned, it just seems so like naive and pretty and Pollyanna-ish. And I could see that because it was not an informed perspective. It was informed from one side. Enormously informed, and that was from this side that we call as the mystery, the spiritual dimension, that the name we put on it. But it really is an immersion into something that can't be known through the mind, and discovering it's actually there in a very palpable way. But I didn't get the other learning, and so I was making my actions and my perspectives based upon one side of the picture. Now I'm seeing, like, you know, ain't always easy, the ain't always easy part of it. And cleaning the bathrooms here at Lupin is one of my real great opportunities, but enough said about that.
I think that there's so many aspects to our education, and I think living is an education, that a well-lived human being takes in more and more aspects of life, I think, and that makes you broader and more interesting. And for me, wrapping the spiritual reality around the material world and allowing it to be impacted with that aspect of it is what's exciting for me at this point. You know, it's like seeing the world with all its defects and all its stuff, and yet being able to love it as you love the puking, pooping little baby, which you know will eventually turn into something other than a puking, pooping little thing. It'll do other things. I find it fascinating, that's all.
Here's a perspective that I think is really worth considering, and I think it was Jeremy Rifkin, doesn't matter, one of the people I was reading this week.
Well, it matters to Jeremy Rifkin if it wasn't him.
I'll give him credit if he really wants it. And that is, it's something about, they said, the talent or the intelligence or whatever we need is there, but there's no place for it to kind of cohere with itself. Marianne Williamson says the same thing in her book, Healing of America. She says, what we lack is an evolved sense of our collective purpose for our talent and intelligence. Here's the line. It feels as though there is no unified social force field for the effort, no number to call, no place to sign up that organizes itself around what I see is the intention of people of goodwill who want to see the bestness spread out for everybody and are open to learning new and better ways for making that happen. Humble enough to learn, caring enough to reach out and start taking action.
An incident happened just recently. A man in Portland, somewhat deranged, began to threaten two women, one of whom wore a burqa, and two other men, or was it three, I can't remember, came to their rescue. And in the process, two of them died and one of them lived. I mean, because this guy knifed those two guys. And the mother of one of the fallen, I'll call him a hero, because he came to rescue those women. She said that's just the way he was. He was always wanting to help. And she said that he should die helping somebody seems fitting, even though the loss is unbearable.
Wow.
And She said that we don't have enough love in the world, that we love each other. And Portland came out, you know, like all the different religions and various different denominations of beliefs came out in honoring these young men. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it touched my heart in such a deep way. Because all we hear about all the time is, you know, and this person did this terrible thing and that person. And it started out with this person doing something terrible, but at the same time, there were these three men who stepped up in a way. They risked their lives and lost their lives.
It's important to remember that the good that has the potential and almost invariably will come out of any situation, because it's like evolution programs it to do that. As soon as it brings about some really uncomfortable or problematic situation, the universe goes to work to construct some way of dealing with that, so that is pulled back to working within the harmonic system, that is the universe working with itself. And that's the gigantic movement of the good that keeps embracing the quote-unquote bad and transforming it through love that is so penetrating that it's actually irresistible.
And there cannot be enough said about that.
And that's why we come on every week, thanks to our sponsor and you all who tune in and listen to us. And we're very grateful for you. And I have a sneaking feeling that some of these folks that are listening to our show are part of that very group that wants to cohere and really make the difference. It's good. Like he says, the power, the energy, the talent is there, but it needs to find a force field, a context, a metaphor, if you will, that can allow it to discover itself and then begin to take action accordingly. And, oh my goodness, no, we've got two more minutes here. In the last 2 minutes, I want to acknowledge who? The people of the United States, because they're on the ready of learning to become more mature. And this is an exciting time. It's like it's the United States is almost ready for its bar mitzvah. and it's ready to become a man, to be responsible.
Or a woman.
Or a woman. I think you get my point.
A mature human being would be probably the best.
Well,
more mature. Maturing.
Someone who recognized that maturity is an option. I'll take that for 300.
Okay, you got it. You got 300. Put them in the box. Put them in the box.
Enough said.
Enough said. Yeah. I feel like
we've said enough.
We've said enough.
And what that means is that we're coming to our program. I'd love to hear from you. My email address is estrider@gmail.com. And if you'd like to hear more of that connectedness piece, because that is my business card to humanity, my manifesto. It's about a 10-minute long piece that was music specially written for it. Contact me at estrider@gmail.com, or go to thelaughingheart.org and to see all the goodies we've got available. We've got beautiful things and radio shows and TV shows.
And pretty pictures.
Pretty pictures, and we've got hammers and screwdrivers.
We don't have that.
I think it's enough said. So, one more thing. Then it'll really be enough said. What do we need to remember, Rochelle?
We need to remember that resistance is what we add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Enough said.